T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
The Spiegel and Parkin Show.
Profits, the revenues, fully allow a team to pay within the luxury tax area and move to that, you know, where they want to say, I want my fan base to be in Playoffville and live there and be there for a decade, and I'm going to have a good chance of winning at a 70% rate. I have the revenues that are, you know, nearly double many of the other participants in the league. That's how I'm going to use my revenue to be live in the Playoffville district.
Matt Spiegel, Danny Parkins, middays on The Score.
Welcome to Playoffville, Scott Boras. That's Scott Boras, the power agent. The audio brought to you by Dell. Dell Small Business, Black Friday sale. What's going on now? The lowest prices of the year and free shipping on everything. Shop doorbusters on business PCs with Intel Core processors. Call 1-877-BUY-DELL.
The Scott Boras Show yesterday.
Yeah.
At the GM meetings. The extortionist, hard at work, bloviating like a champ, right? I mean, that dude controls multiple teams' destinies, multiple $100 million contracts for this year. And for next, massive names on the docket next year. And he is trying to shame teams that would dare consider fiscal responsibility. He's trying to shame teams who choose not to live in the Playoffville district.
He's a hype man.
Sure is.
He's an agent.
A good one.
Yeah, he's a great one. Like, he has this reputation of being bad for the sport, which is ludicrous. And,
well, he's bad if you want a... I mean, he's not bad for the sport.
No, it's insane to say that he's bad for the sport. Yeah. He's made players hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars.
Those are his clients.
Yeah.
And he's so incredibly good at what he does. The Extortionist was the title of a New Yorker piece like maybe 20 years ago that I read that illuminated me into how he did his work. And it's still at that point, I was definitely a guy like, man, Scott Boras is evil and he's running too much because look at owners like Jerry Reinsdorf who hates Scott Boras. And then you get a little older and you're like, wait a minute. He's really effing good at his job. Why am I defending owners? What am I doing here?
Right. We talked about it a little bit yesterday in transition through a different prism, but I think there should be enough room in the sports lexicon to be like to root for your team, right? You root for your team over the players because the players come and go and you'll be a Cubs fan or a Bulls fan well beyond any of their playing careers and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes sense to me that fans are team first. But cognitively, you love those teams because of the players that are on them. And you wear players' jerseys and you go to a game, oh man, Steph Curry's in town, LeBron's in town, whatever. And the vast majority of us are employees, not employers.
Right.
So why would you have any sort of disdain? Why would you be pro-ownership, pro-billionaire, as opposed to pro-revenue generator?
Because you like sameness. You like when your guys stick around. You like when you've had a chance to root for somebody and they get to stick around because it's...
What about when your owner trades somebody?
Well, yeah, that's...
Or cuts somebody.
That can be an issue. Sometimes people cry when... Who was it who got traded? He's my favorite guy. It was like a minor little White Sox player.
Brent Lillibridge, wasn't it?
It was Brent Lillibridge.
Wow.
Brent freaking Lillibridge.
Everyone's got a favorite.
Right? And a dad took a video of his little kid crying, bawling, but he's my favorite guy.
Reinsdorf.
Right?
Yeah.
So, but there's something in us that likes the sameness and, you know, and the familiarity. And so, I mean, that ends up coming across as pro-owner sometimes in these conversations.
Yeah, but, and that's favoritism and, like, listen, different strokes, different folks, be the type of fan that you want to be. But just in general, the vast majority of us are workers. We work for corporations or people or businesses or whatever. Like, be pro-labor. Don't be pro the man.
Mm.
Scott Boras represents the labor.
He does. He's trying to rile up fan bases too yesterday with this stuff. He wants you to be angry when your teams don't spend. And he wants you to stand up and say, spend, spend. He wants to make you stand up and say, these freaking cheap Cubs. He talks about it like the Cubs have all the Cubby bucks now, right? He talks about it like this particular offseason right here, they should be able to spend whatever they want. The Cubby bucks that we have talked about eventually coming, he talks about it like they are all here right now and they should spend whatever they want.
The quote is, if you ever want to position a franchise economically to be where they may have increased their franchise value by $1 billion in 3 or 4 years. And they have a new TV contract coming up, and they have this amazing group of everyday players who are young and gifted. They have all these choices. The amount of money that's rolling in, the revenues annually and in the future, the Cubs can do whatever they choose to do in this free agent market and the next ones. And to not have championship pitchers on your team, there aren't many of them. There are none with the championship numbers of Jake Arrieta in this market.
So that is him trying to drive up the Arrieta market, and maybe not with just the Cubs.
Well, of course not with just the Cubs. Right. Yeah, right, exactly.
But he's trying to like kind of dare the Cubs into a spend atmosphere. But there's lots of reasons not to spend a boatload of money this particular offseason. There are reasons, because next year is when you're going to want to spend an incredible amount of money.
Right, and the Cubs... I think Scott Boras, it's possible that in that 6-7 sentences can be simultaneously right and wrong. He is right that the Cubs can afford any free agent in the sport, and their value has gone up exponentially, mm-hmm. and the revenues that are going to be coming in now and in the future are astronomical in the sport, and there is no player or players in the sport that they should not be in the running for if they want them. The part where he's wrong about is the should they want him. He's looking for a 6 or 7 year contract for Jake Arrieta, who's going to be 32 by opening day of next season.
Absolutely not.
No
absolutely
chance.
Not.
Let someone else do that. Mm-hmm. And now, if he's asking for a 7 year deal, maybe he ends up having his client sign a 5 year deal. Like, your job as an agent in a negotiation is to start 7 years, $220 million, mm-hmm. and then work your way downwards.
He does not like the luxury tax, and he wants teams to not be frightened of the luxury tax, and he wants to make teams look cheap, right? He wants to make organizations look very cheap if they choose not to to hit the luxury tax. And what's interesting to me these days is how the luxury tax is structured and how it's affecting entire front offices as they discuss how to build their teams. Because there's the economic stuff. Of course, which we've known about the luxury tax, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Which is that you spend up to a certain threshold, then you...
And the more you spend, the more exponentially you get taxed. So your tax rate increases the more that you spend over the threshold.
If a team spends above $217 million next year, it gets an extra 12% tax in addition to the 20, 30, or 50% luxury tax. If they spend $237 million is an extra 42.5, yada, yada. Like, the more you spend, the more you get
taxed. The tax gets more egregious the more money you spend. Simple way to put it.
But I don't know if people realize, if every fan realizes that there is now a baseball operations reason why you don't want to get in the luxury tax. The new rule is that if you spend $237 million, then a draft pick, a team that spends above $237 million will have its top draft pick lowered 10 spots. So let's say you're number 15 in the draft. They lower it and they put you 25th or 26th. Or if your pick is in the top six, then they take your second pick and they lower that 10 spots. So think about that. It's always been the money guys, you know, fighting with the baseball ops guys, saying, let's spend, let's not spend. Oh, really? Okay, we don't have to. Okay, we have restrictions because of luxury tax. Okay. Now the baseball ops guy might say, wait, I don't want to do that either. I don't want to get to $237 million either. I like our draft pick. I don't want to drop 10 spots of our draft pick. I mean, it's – then there's a couple other things, too, that a couple other baseball operations things that they snuck in there that now affect whether a team wants to hit that luxury tax or not. That is new.
That is new.
And that and so I think it's an interesting time because you've got that, and that's it's a different kind of dynamic in those conversations.
What I guess I would say is for the Cubs in the near term, I expect them to be top five payroll teams for the duration of this championship window, because I don't care about their draft pick and the next. I know that Theo needs to. Mm-hmm. I know that Jed needs to. Mm-hmm. But if he has to do that by drafting it, you know, they're already going to be drafting low. in the first round relatively because they should be winning a lot of games. Mm-hmm. So what, you know, that difference to me would be significant if it's
the 15.
Second pick to 12th pick.
Right.
Right.
And if you're in the top six, it wouldn't. They do it with your next pick.
Okay, fine. Right.
So 7th pick to 17th.
7th pick to 17th, exactly. But I don't expect the Cubs to be drafting up there in the near future. Mm-hmm. So spend your money and now choose who you're going to spend your money on correctly.
So that would, for you, and I understand this, would just get added to the pile of, it's not my money. Come on, man. Here you go. Right?
Yeah,
but it's development. It's a development issue all of a sudden.
Understood. And there's international signing and there's creative ways and there's trades to acquire young players. There's ways that you can still restock and develop, and your team development has to be able to turn the 40th best prospect into being the 15th best because you're scouting and all that. I'm not saying don't build through the draft and scouting and development and prospects and all of that. Just for the next 5 years, this is the championship window.
Yeah.
This is it.
No, I know.
This is what they've done. They've done it all for this moment. So I don't care if it's not Jake Arrieta. In fact, I don't want it to be.
Right.
Because I don't agree with the idea of, oh, well, it's not my money, just spend it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, well, I know that there is, it's not limitless
but
money.
But if it's next year and they want to sign Manny Machado and put him at third base and move Chris Bryant to left field.
Right, because they've traded Schwarber for a pitcher.
Right.
Yeah.
Or it's next year and Bryce Harper says, no, I do want to come play here.
Right.
Right? So
there should not be a time where the Cubs are saying, we could not afford it. If they say, we did all of our projections, it was worth $200 million.
Right.
He got $270 million, and we're not going to be fiscally irresponsible just because we can play in in this end of the pool.
So it's
fine.
But it needs to be, I think it needs to be somebody so worthwhile that you take on the baseball development hit, which is now here in this luxury tax too. Like, I don't want to go into the luxury tax, and I'm sure that some of these conversations are happening
among
the baseball operations people. I don't want to drop in the draft because we're signing Jake Arrieta or player X because we're giving Wade Davis 4 years at 15 per, you know, whatever. Like, are they going to get in that tax or not? The other thing is that
I expect the Cubs to pay a luxury tax within this championship window.
Without a doubt.
100%.
Well, they did in 2016. For the first time,
right, but
they did.
I guess I meant
going
forward in the new rules and taking the draft compensation or that sort of thing.
And they apparently they did not. And there was a little discrepancy about this, by the way, when it came out, I think earlier in the week in a USA Today article about whether they paid the tax or not in 2017. Apparently they did not. So they paid it in 2016. They didn't pay it in 2017. And when you do it in multiple years repeating, it really does hurt you.
Right.
So it's good.
It's like running, right? Like so there's strategy and goal. If you do it if you could find a way to pay the tax every other year, that's beneficial. And that
right.
Sort of thing.
So
it's very confusing, and most fans don't need to understand it, and we don't even, frankly, really need to understand all of it. They just need to.
There's multiple reasons why some teams will choose to be in the tax and some teams will not. And some of them are simply financial, and some of them are, all right, you've told me how much money I have, and I am a different kind of school thinker, and I would like to spend my money doing this. I would like to spend my money doing that. As opposed to chasing free agents. Remember, that's how things went ugly in the back half of the Boston years.
Yeah, and most free agent contracts at that end don't work out.
Where is that? Right? There's that level of wisdom that we've learned as well, that with the steroid testing the way it is, or for whatever reason, the value in signing those big deals, they often do not work. They just kill you. So if you see a team, say the Cubs or anybody, choose not to be in the tech. There's multiple reasons. And now there's this developmental piece, this baseball ops piece in there too.
Let's talk about this side of just the limitless money that people think is coming in and where we really expect them to be able to spend. Because I think that some people just don't know about some of the plans of what they're doing with a network and those sort of things and how that's going to change the game for the Cubs going forward. It's Spiegel and Parkins on the Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
I always feel like this time of year, most teams are balancing spending the money versus a trade and how that, you know, how that fits with what they want to do. That's what most teams are doing right now. I think there could be some perfect matches, but usually those don't happen. So usually it takes a while. But right now, I think everyone's getting a feel for that balance.
It was Jed Hoyer yesterday talking about the balance between spending, trades, and how the Cubs could approach the offseason. There's a belief that the Cubs have an unlimited amount of money to
Cubby
spend.
Cubby bucks. Cubby bucks. Are they here yet or not? Cubby Bucks.
Well, there's more here now than there were in the past, right? But they're probably not at their most flush, right? They probably don't have like the full swimming pool of coins, Scrooge McDuck style, but like maybe a few bathtubs, right? Like they're doing very well.
Treasure bath! Yeah, they're doing very well. They don't have the full hotel income yet. They're still paying to build the hotel.
Correct.
They have built all of Mesa, and they have whatever is coming in from that after having spent that, but they got a nice deal. They've built a lot. They spent a lot of money to build their office. Offices and stuff like that.
Yep, new Cubs clubhouse, which isn't a revenue generator, but in theory attracts more players who want to come play for them, that sort of thing.
They spent the money on the park. This would just had the first year of the park. That's the outside gate H.
Yep.
And so they had the first year of that extra beer income, which I'm sure was delightful for them.
That's correct.
And by the way, that park is opening, I think, next Friday as The Rink. It's frozen.
Nice.
Starting next Friday, you can bring your kids there to skate.
The new club will be open. Should be open this upcoming year.
Yeah,
right?
That's
like that high end club and all that.
Yeah, I just drove by actually the other day. I was going to the G Man to see a friend's band. It used to be Ginger Man, now it's G Man because we got to hip it up, I guess. But yeah, the construction is underway. That new fancy club is going to be underneath. The seats behind home plate.
But the biggest revenue generators for all of these teams and all of these leagues, frankly, is television money, television revenue. And the Dodgers most famously have this $8.3 billion TV deal over 25 years with Time Warner.
Say that again.
$8.3 billion over a quarter of a century, 25 years with Time Warner Cable.
It's fascinating. On a lot of levels, for those who don't know, they'd made it with Time Warner. A lot of their own customers cannot see the Dodgers because they don't have Time Warner Cable.
Like DirecTV has refused to broadcast the games.
The Dodgers
they're not going to pay the freight.
Right. Dodgers chose to take that chance of angering fans, thinking that fans would eventually roll over or that Time Warner and DirecTV would come to some kind of a deal.
Right.
And it's ongoing and ugly. But, oh, by the way, did Danny mention $8.3 billion.
So the Dodgers, and they did it at the perfect right time. You read stuff about what's happening with ESPN and cord cutting and the rights fees and how they're not profiting off of Monday Night Football and all of that because of just people, like I said, are cutting cords and watching on Hulu, Amazon, streaming, all sorts of things like that. So it's a different media landscape just than it was 4 or 5 years ago in terms of live rights fees.
Mm-hmm.
The Cubs want to start their own network.
2020.
Right, when their WGN and NBC Sports Chicago deals expire. And they want to start their own network, even though I'm sure NBC Sports Chicago and WGN and maybe a couple of other channels would be interested in bidding again.
The Yankees were first with the YES Network, I believe.
Right, exactly. And these things make an insane amount of money, but they're complicated because you got 162 games. That's a lot of inventory. You could replay some games. You could do some Cubs-centric programming, but 24/7, 365 is a lot of hours to program, mm-hmm. right? Like the Big Ten Network has to figure out what type of programming they're going to put on, and they got an entire conference.
So you have to run your own network. You have to become your own gangster and figure out how to do that stuff. It should be said, that's what they've done by spending their own money on all these infrastructure things that we're talking about. And these moneymakers, they have mostly spent Ricketts' money, their own money, on that kind of stuff.
So the satellite to get the games out, the cameras, the people who man the cameras, the everything that goes into it that WGN or NBC Sports have already, they'd have to provide. So it's a very expensive undertaking. But if they own all of their own broadcast, they share $0 in advertising revenue.
Right.
And that's the trade-off. So instead of splitting like Cubs revenue and the Score revenue in the radio deal or however they do it or whatever with their TV partners and et cetera, like they just get it all. And so it'll be a different time. It'll be a different media landscape, but I'm sure they'll do it and I'm sure it will be massively profitable. And I'm sure it also will involve $1 billion plus in revenue.
So, okay. So you do think it will. Yeah.
It'll be huge.
It will be massive.
It will because there's nothing more valuable in local sports than a baseball team because there's so many games.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like that's why the Cubs are so great for the station and all. There's 162 of them plus the playoffs.
Right.
It's just you can sell commercials during 162 broadcasts, minimum.
There has been a thought that, and we've seen this with national stuff too, that the broadcast rights bubble right?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
And because we remember we talked about it when we talked about Espen and stuff like that. But what's interesting is the fallout from that Dodger deal is going to very much affect what the Cubs deal is. Time Warner is losing money. Right.
Well, that's the thing. They've got to figure out so that they can get enough clearances, mm-hmm. so that they can be profitable and enough eyeballs so that the advertising rates can be high enough. But
yes,
they're not sharing any of the advertising revenue. 100% goes into the team.
Mm-hmm.
It's so even though the number will be, and again, I don't have any super inside information, a couple of conversations, whatever, but just an understanding of the general media landscape.
Right.
The number will look small compared to the Dodgers, it should still be massive compared to what they already have.
So can you as an organization bank on that starting then and start spending with that in mind a couple years before? Those are some of the conversations they're having.
People on the text line are doing the math of $8.3 billion divided by 25, and yeah, it's over $330 million a year of local television revenue.
Uh-huh.
So think about that. Local television revenue. That is not factoring in national television revenue,
right,
which all of the teams split.
Right, or the MLB Advanced Media revenue.
Right. So not MLB Network revenue, not Sunday Night Baseball revenue, mm-hmm. not a single ticket sold, a single jersey sold, a single beer sold,
uh-huh.
any of that. $300+ million a year in local television revenue.
So Dodgers will be in the luxury tax whenever they want.
Yeah.
As long as they want.
Unlimited money.
And they still have choices that they can make about how many prospects to keep. The health of that organization is ridiculous. Right
but
now.
So to your question, and it depends a lot on your ownership, on do you spend on the come? Like mm-hmm. do you have to operate your team in a year by year fiscally responsible thing? Like our 2017 output versus our 2017 input,
mm-hmm.
or do you have an ownership group that's like, the value of my franchise has gone up 5x or whatever it is since I bought the team, and I know I've got more money coming in, so I can spend a little bit more than I'm bringing in this year because I know I'm going to own this for generations for my family,
right.
And a one-year loss doesn't really matter so much.
And think about that as you're wondering whether how they look at it. Look at the long view that Tom Ricketts has taken. With everything that they've done.
Exactly.
After a period of inactivity at the beginning, trying to gauge the landscape, work with the cities, figure things out, he then has invested his own money and taken an extraordinarily long view, and the franchise is headed in incredible places.
And they have plenty of money, and it's going to be in the family for a long, long time. And so I would imagine my best guess would be that they'd be willing to spend more on the team than they brought in a given year to maximize this championship window. It seems totally reasonable because of all of the things that they're set up to do.
Mm-hmm.
They won't be the Dodgers, and they might not be the Yankees. But other than those two teams, they should be consistently top five in payroll and top five in revenue. I'm not going to say in perpetuity, because once you don't have good players on your team anymore, it's not worth it to do it. Like, at some point, the Cubs will need to rebuild.
Right. It's at some point you probably need to embark.
From a baseball standpoint, though, not a financial standpoint. From a financial standpoint, I would guess the Cubs should be a top five business in baseball, basically in perpetuity.
I think it's fascinating because this sport that has never had a salary cap now has a luxury tax, and because of the multiple penalties and the baseball operations penalties, too, now that you have a lot of different people, you have all the different reasons we talked about, it's kind of acting like a de facto salary cap, which I guess was the idea, but it's working. It's going to work better than a lot of people thought. So I don't know about top five payroll. Like, I don't know who's that going to be. The Astros just won the World Series with what, the 18th payroll?
Something like that.
They were at number 18.
Yeah.
Indians were in between 15 and 20, I think.
Well,
Diamondbacks were within 15 and 20.
Right, well, because there's not enough. There's a buddy that I know that is wealthy, right? Like, he's a good friend of ours or whatever, but so he's in some of the pools that we do, right?
Mm-hmm.
He could bid more than all of us and just buy out every team in the NCAA pool or mm-hmm. the auction draft or whatever, but the money doesn't matter to him. He's just doing it for fun and to hang out with his friends. But you spend within reason because you're not an idiot. So you're not going to spend unnecessary money to just blow teams out of the water, right? And that's why teams that – everybody has plenty of money now with revenue sharing and where baseball is and the health of it. So you got to be smart. You can't like a Jason Hayward contract would sink the Royals,
right? And it's not going to sink these guys.
And it doesn't. And that's the difference. And that's the competitive advantage that the big market teams have.
With all that in mind, eventually the John Lackey and Carl Crawford contracts in Boston and those other contracts, they did sink the Red Sox. And you know what they had to do?
With a few other things
With a few other things. But you know what they had to do? They had to trade everybody to the Dodgers. They got bailed out.
Right.
They got bailed out with Josh Beckett, Adrian Gonzalez, Carl Crawford. That famous Red Sox bailout deal that the Dodgers did enabled the Red Sox to restart. So that gets back to what I'm always fascinated in, having lived through the denouement, to take the narrative term, or like lived through the decline in the second half of his Red Sox time. What are Theo and Jed going to do differently?
So hopefully that was a lot of context for people in terms of when you have an expectation of how much and when the Cubs should be spending. Hopefully that illuminates a little bit on how they're operating.
Yeah, and it's stuff that we'll continue to follow along the way. Real quick, the White Sox just made a trade with the Seattle Mariners for international pool money. So, you know, the Mariners get some more money for their international signing pool, which could potentially be Shohei Ohtani, but you know that is a crazy situation that he may not even end up being posted or whatever. And the White Sox got a hard-throwing reliever named Thiago Vieira, but he throws between 97 to 100 and he's reached 102. Before. So let's see, how old is he? I don't know. He pitched 54 innings. What's interesting to me is
24.
That 24. Thank you. The White Sox had such good success with sign and flip with like Tommy Canley, right? They ended up getting a prospect that they really liked from the Yankees by packaging Robertson and Canley and that stuff. And so the White Sox, their free agency this year is going to be more sign and flip guys. You know, maybe they'll find somebody who they want to spend on who's going to be here for a few years. But more than likely, they're going to be looking to sign and maybe in this case trade for somebody. Showcase, let him come up and throw 101. If he has a great 4 months throwing 100 and he's got control, somebody will give you something for him at the deadline.
I wonder if the Mariners think that they have anything on Ohtani.
It's entirely possible.
Ichiro being there, not as far geographically from home, obviously. I wonder if they're positioning themselves to try to get him.
They were already talked about as one of the favorites, them and the Dodgers and the Cubs and others. But it's a big mystery, of course, as to what Ohtani wants. But you just brought up a couple reasons why Seattle might be attractive.
Fun sports night tonight. A little bit different, maybe people not expecting it, but pretty fun sports night. We'll get into it. I had a charge at noon, so get your fantasy questions ready. It's Spiegel and Parkins on the Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Spiegel and Parkins on the Score. Your fantasy questions for Paul Charchian in 15 minutes. It's brought to you by KFC. Get your family the gift of a $20 fill-up from KFC. You put it on the table instead of under the tree, but they still love it. KFC, it's finger-licking good. So tonight we have the Titans and the Steelers. Both won four games in a row, the Dick LeBeau Bowl. And we have on the early slate, it's in Boston, Warriors and Celtics.
Is that 6 o'clock game then? 6:30?
7 o'clock game.
Seven
right?
Our time?
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay, so eight Eastern.
Yep.
Warriors and Celtics. What's the health level for the Warriors? They've been great without Durant.
I don't think he's back, but okay.
They're still good without him.
Still good without him and still a potential finals preview. I mean, I'm not picking against the Cavs and LeBron, but Celtics have been damn good.
It's tempting. Jason Tatum's awfully good, helping them miss Gordon Hayward a lot less than maybe you would have expected.
Yeah, he looks really good. Tatum. I thought that they made a mistake on him over Josh Jackson. And who knows? I mean, plenty of time left in the career. Like the Josh Jackson and the workout and the entire thing, but Tatum looks really good.
Josh Jackson looks like a bum so far.
Does he?
I know. He's not
bum
been good.
Bum on a stick.
Really? I have not been watching a lot of Phoenix.
He cannot shoot. Kind of a problem.
I knew he wouldn't be able to shoot. They're such a bad team. Like, Tatum's in such a better situation.
Yeah, but Tatum's showing more of a handle and a drive.
I know. Tatum looks much better.
To the ball than I expected.
Tatum looks like the real deal.
And Kyrie's been ridiculous, although he continues to think very strange things about the world.
He's got
that whole...
Bums me out.
Just how odd he is. How flat earthy
I
is.
Thought for a while that he was trolling the media, and yeah. I'm still clinging
you're
to that
you're
theory.
You're hoping.
I'm clinging to the theory that it is a media troll job.
No, man, I think he's like Carl Everett. He's like this generation's Carl Everett, who didn't believe in dinosaurs, legitimately fought against the dinosaurs. What? Show me the proof. Show me the proof. Well, Carl.
I hope you're wrong. That's all I got. I have nothing else. I just hope you're wrong.
And you mentioned it is the Dick LeBeau Bowl. Dick LeBeau was the defensive coordinator in Pittsburgh forever. He's now in, I think, his third year in Tennessee as the defensive coordinator. I can't get enough of this guy. I can't
get enough of Dick LeBeau?
I can't get enough.
Well, it's good because he's been around for a while.
I think it's the Dick LeBeau, actually.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, if you want to say it right.
I have he is 80 years old, okay? His players continue to love him. His players have always loved him.
I have a smoking device named Dick LeBeau.
Very nice.
Yeah.
He has been a part of NFL seasons as a player or a coach for 59 straight years. Since he was 21. 59 straight seasons in the NFL.
Take a year off, Dick.
That's crazy. He perfected and popularized the zone blitz, right? I think people know that's his thing. Which was actually invented by Bill Arnsberger, the Dolphins under Don Shula in the early 70s. But then, so sometimes LeBeau is called the inventor of the zone blitz. He's not, but he perfected it.
Look at you with your Dick LeBeau facts.
Man, you remember, man, I care about like the X's and O's thing, like the blood, sweat, and chalk we were talking about the other day. Like, I love that stuff.
Sure, yeah.
But I do have a lot of Dick LeBeau facts.
You do?
Because...
Are these like Chuck Norris facts?
You know, basically, because people are saying that Dick LeBeau is the most interesting man in the NFL. And I read a couple of stories in advance of this, and I know you have not read the stories.
No,
so I think, would you play along with me... As I give you some Dick LeBeau facts here, because he's some amazing things.
And these are all facts.
These are all facts.
Okay.
They might not all be true.
Okay. Got it. All right. Dick LeBeau facts.
Let's do it this way.
From Matt Spiegel.
I will give you three Dick LeBeau facts. Okay.
Okay.
And one of them is fake.
All right. I like this game. Yeah.
We've done this. I've heard this. Stern used to do it with the National Enquirer game.
Okay.
Years and years ago.
So you have Titans defensive coordinator Dick LeBeau facts ahead of the Dick LeBeau Bowl.
Yes.
The Dick LeBeau, sorry.
Yes.
Titans and Steelers. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. He plays guitar, has written a dozen songs, and has a tip jar in his office for players to tip him. That is one fact.
Well, so if they tip him, he plays them a song?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. So,
all right.
That's one.
That's a very specific fact.
Dick LeBeau, while he used to be with the Lions, right? He was played in the Lions with Dick Geron, by the way. But when he was with the Lions, he was used as a model for the Ford Automobile Company's annual catalog. Dick LeBeau.
Okay.
Okay.
Hard to imagine now.
Uh-huh.
Red-faced and everything, but okay.
And number three... Dick LeBeau once recited, "'Twas the night before Christmas," to his team. He stood before the entire team on Christmas Eve, recited the poem from memory for 18 minutes without skipping a beat.
What? Wait, "'Twas the night before Christmas," an 18-minute poem?
Apparently, if that one's true.
I think that one's got to be. I'm saying that he was a Ford model and he plays the guitar for money.
He does play the guitar for money. He was not a Ford model.
Not a Ford.
He did, though, read "'Twas the Night Before Christmas" in front of the entire team for 18 minutes, apparently.
Wow. Okay.
Okay.
I thought it was a real page turner. I thought it was like the Boer's book. Like, just fly right through it. 18 minutes.
I didn't know it was that long either.
Okay.
I guess it's absurd.
The more you know. I mean, we're Jews.
Yeah, but I mean, exposed as Jews.
Exposed as
Finally.
Jews.
Finally.
Yeah, yeah. Secrets out.
People have been wanting us exposed.
Is anyone listening?
All right. So, no, he wasn't a Ford model. Okay.
Okay. Wasn't a Ford model. Dick LeBeau. All right. The more you know.
Cool. I have one more set of Dick LeBeau facts.
Okay.
Okay.
Still, same thing. Two true, one fake.
Two true, one fake.
Okay. Campy left the studio for a minute. He just came back in. We are playing Dick LeBeau facts, Campy.
Yeah.
Two true, one fake. Yeah.
Two true, one fake.
Okay.
Number one, he is a scratch golfer and has recorded 8 holes in one.
Not true.
Okay. That's one. Number two, Dick LeBeau was Michael Caine's stunt double. The actor Michael Caine. He was Michael Caine's stunt double in the 1970 film Too Late, the Hero. Okay?
Okay.
That's number two. And number three, he used to bake brownies for Steelers players that got so popular, he went into business in Pittsburgh. LeBrownies were available for a while in grocery stores of Pittsburgh. LeBrownies.
All right, the Michael Caine one is, you're not Costanza. Like, you're a little easier to read than that. That is way too specific to be a lie.
Okay, that is true.
So that one is true.
Dick LeBeau was indeed Michael Caine's stunt double in a 1970 movie. Is this guy not the most interesting man?
This is a very interesting figure.
I want to hang out with him and talk X's and O's and everything else, and music and everything.
And guitar.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that if you wanted to golf with Dick LeBeau, he would not have 8 hole-in-one stories. He's too good of a coach to be that good of a golfer.
Yeah.
Good coaches don't golf that
much. Okay, no, you're wrong. He's a scratch golfer and has 8 holes in one.
What?
He's also supposedly an incredible pool shark and great at card games. Like, you can't beat him at any of those things.
He's a scratch golfer in the present tense?
In the present, well,
how old is he?
He's 80. He's 80. All right, so maybe at 77 he was a scratch golfer. You gonna hammer him away?
Oh, I'm just saying, you think that an 80-year-old... Sorry for being an ageist. I can't break 100 these days. But you think that there's an 80-year-old in the world who's a scratch golfer?
I don't know. I don't know.
That's incredible.
Well, that's... Yeah. That's,
good for him.
He never did bake brownies for...
He never baked brownies.
As far as I know. There is not... He never went into business.
He doesn't have a Haagen-Dazs flavor named after him?
So when you guys were doing, like, Dick LeBeau, when you said you had a smoking device, it's called Dick LeBeau. I'm like,
Dick LeBeau.
Wow. It's got to make my LeBrownies facts sound Manute a little more
Bowl,
real.
LeBron, LeBron James, et cetera.
Do you have those? Or you had those at different times?
Jim Boelheim is the only one that I ever had. But came across some creative stoners in my day that happened to be sports fans. I know that might come as a shock to you. But, LeBron James, I thought was...
LeBron James!
Raul LeBonyes.
LeBron James!
Yeah, exactly. Dikembe Mutombo.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So
sure.
They're out there.
Don't use those anymore.
Bull Derek.
Don't need any of those anymore.
Yeah.
It's not my preferred delivery mechanism.
No. Everyone's got their own.
Their own
idea, yeah.
Their own different way to do it.
That's right.
I can't wait till I could buy pot directly from the Chicago Bears website.
Right. What did we come up with as the best Bears pot strand?
Well, because this is our...
We've done this before.
Yeah, we've done this before because we're convinced that the NFL is going to be loudly anti-marijuana until the moment it's legalized across the country, and then they will instantly, like, activate websites that they've had ready for a while.
Yes, exactly. NFLstrands.com. And they're going to just say, like, you're going to have teams centered indicas and sativas.
Right.
Oh, your team's good this year?
Uh-huh.
Here's a sativa. Right. You want to fall asleep during your game? A little indica for you.
You want a quarter pound of sweetness?
Yeah,
no problem. It's available.
Of Coach Kush.
Right. All this is all already online somewhere.
Yeah. Yes.
Just hit a button and it opens right up.
It exists.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Samurai smoke.
I'm excited to see what Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth have. Like that first sideline report. Let's go down to Michelle Tafoya for some Dick LeBeau facts.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm looking forward to it.
So, yeah, if you hear some Dick LeBeau facts tonight, just know that I gave you a couple. He hung out with Motown musicians while he was a Detroit Lion, apparently. He used to hang around with those
You
guys.
Did a deep dive on... Do you know more about Dick LeBeau or me about Taj Gibson? I don't know the answer.
Let's get him on!
Let's get them both on.
My birthday's coming.
Luke Bongley.
Actually, it's...
Wesley Pipes.
Mine's Ed Bongfor.
Ed Bongfor? It's perfect.
Or Redick Bong for the real deep hockey fans.
Oh, yeah.
And LeGarrette Blunt. I mean, now you're just not being creative, texters. Jeez.
One of ours was Turf Monster.
Yeah, we did have Turf Monster. Mm. That's right. Okay.
I never was that creative about the items. I waited till after, and then I solved all the world's problems.
Yeah, of course. Deep spiritual thoughts after. We'll have some of those with Paul Charchi and get your fantasy questions in on the score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.